You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's Monday, September 17th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today, and it's a special edition of Juno Afternoon. We have Peter Kenyon at 360 here in the KTOO building and a live audience. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome yourselves and Peter Kenyon, please.
Thank you.
It's great to have you in town, Peter. I think a lot of people know you as NPR's international correspondent in Istanbul. I don't know that a lot of people know that you started radio in Petersburg, Alaska.
Well, it was a while ago.
And today here on Juno Afternoon, I'm hoping to get to know more about you as a person and what you like to do on your free time and stuff like that. Tomorrow, Peter will be presenting for the Juno World Affairs Council here in the same space at 5 o'clock. Admission to that is free. Peter, what will you be talking about tomorrow?
About the region I work in, Turkey, Iran, the Middle East. Also, you know, take questions on anything, journalism, where it's going, whatever, how things are in that field. I'm also going to talk to a class out at University of Alaska Southeast. That public is invited to that as well. That's in the Egan Lecture Hall at 11:30.
And that's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Let's see. Let's go back to Petersburg circa
1981, I believe it was.
1981.
A fine year. I came up on the Malaspina, I believe.
All right. And where were you coming from?
They used to leave from Prince Rupert in those days. Yeah, it was. I coerced my brother to drop me off there, although he would much rather have been in New Orleans at the time. And he drove me all the way up, and I got on the ferry and showed up in Petersburg.
20-something at the time?
Yeah, I guess that would have been mid-20s, something like that. Yeah, early to mid.
And what did you start doing when you got to Petersburg?
Well, I was not doing much for the first few months. It was winter was approaching fast, and there wasn't much happening. And then I had come up with a young woman whose brother lived in Petersburg and was a hand troller. I met him. He was a great guy, but he didn't need any help. So I followed her up to KFSK, the radio station, where she had a show. And the program director, a woman named Katie Sloan, who used to be the partner of Bill Legere, walked up to me and said, "What do you know about classical music?" And I said, "Beethoven." She said, "Good, 9 o'clock Sunday. You're our classical music host." So that was my entry into radio.
I love the accessibility of public media, I guess we should say public radio back then. How long did you just do the music station or the music show?
Well, I'm a little fuzzy on the exact dates, but, you know, for several months. And then there was a need for a volunteer coordinator, and Glenda Carino was the news director at the time. And then eventually she moved up here to Juneau, and they said, "Well, why don't you be the news director?" So I did, and then I found out that a local young man had married a woman from El Salvador. This is 82. There's lots of death squads, and it was very bad down there. So I went out, grabbed a very big Marantz tape recorder, and talked to him and her about what it was like down there. And so I guess my first story actually had an international edge to it.
I see. When did music enter the picture for you?
Oh, I always played music, loved it. I got my first guitar when I was 7 or so, and eventually learned a little bit on the mandolin so I could get more activity in bands. There was always too many guitar players.
I was just talking to one of my managers who remembers you fast-forwarding several years, playing at an open mic at the Alaskan Bar and Hotel here in Juneau, Alaska.
I'm sure we did, yeah. That and the Red Dog and Folk Festival, of course. That was always fun.
Did you have a band name?
Oh, I don't remember. There was one Folk Festival pickup band that was called Bird Droppings because we did a lot of Charlie Parker songs, but not quite as well as he did them. But.
And, okay, so Charlie Parker, what other kind of songs were you guys playing?
Oh, we really got into the sort of music where people who play bluegrass and folk instruments try to play jazz. We tried to do that a lot, and sometimes more successfully than others, but we had a lot of fun.
All right, good. Going back to when you did that first story and you you were becoming a journalist. Did you have formal training? How did that happen?
I kind of stumbled into it, I have to say. I had done a little journalism class here or there in you know, secondary school, but had no formal training, never went to J school, and I kind of learned by imitating others who I saw doing it. And the old rule of thumb was, for every minute of radio, you can expect to work on the tape for an hour, and that was about right. My very first story was amazingly long. It was like 6 or 7 minutes long, and it took me pretty much all night to do it.
And what were you recording onto? Sorry, you mentioned it before.
It was a big old Marantz cassette tape recorder, you know, before they got small and digital.
So it wasn't reel-to-reel, it was cassette.
Well, I would transfer the cassette to the reel-to-reel, and then I would be cutting the tape.
Actually cutting it with a knife.
Yes, there was the thing called the Editol, because the guy who invented it was named Joel Tall, I think, and it had 45-degree notches there, and you could very easily make two perfect cuts and then put the little splice in backwards, and it would sound very interesting.
I think we're impressive these days when we cut tape on a digital screen and cut and paste and it comes together, but that's nothing like what you guys
do. Yeah, the click and point and shoot, that's great. It's a real change. Plus, you can mix in ambient sound and music and the production ability. It's amazing. Back then, well, NPR still does actually have engineers that insist on doing all that stuff, but out in station land, you can do that all yourself now.
You mentioned J school, and you sort of learned as you went. When you meet people today that go to journalism school and come up through that sort of realm, do you have advice for them or things you can learn from them, or what does that mean to you?
I mean, I think it's good to go to journalism school. The fact that I never did is just a matter of happenstance. You know, I stumbled into this, and I really liked it. I'd always wanted to write, and this was a way to get paid for writing. So I really I admire people who go through it and go through the training, and obviously on-the-job experience is different than what you learn in classes, but that's true of any profession.
Do you remember, besides that story that you mentioned, any other poignant stories from that time?
From the Petersburg days? Mm-hmm. I just really remembered enjoying it. It's a really small town. Everybody knows everybody else's business, and it's very easy to stumble into 40-year-old feuds that you know nothing about. But it was a fun place to work. I learned a lot about the fishing industry in a pretty short time, and started tackling some of those eternal stories like subsistence that seemed to never go away.
In a little bit, I would like to ask you some advice about journalism in a small town, especially now that you've gone to
a pretty big town. Yeah.
Maybe the fifth biggest.
It's big, 15-17 million, something like that.
Yeah, from Petersburg to Istanbul.
I think Cairo actually was a little bigger, but two really big cities.
Wow. Sticking with the music for a second, let's take a little break here. I have some Charlie Parker queued up.
Sounds good to me.
You want to? Okay, let's take a listen to a segment here by Charlie Parker.